The reading this morning is taken from Psalm 23. That's Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever.
People are always on a journey. I mean, it's a cliche, isn't it? But it's true. The simple fact of the passing of time from one moment to another means we're always on a journey from one place to the next. And in the last couple of hundred years, since the period people call the Enlightenment, the assumption in the average Westerner has been that we are on a journey of upward progress, economically, materially, morally, ethically. We're on a journey that is very much an upward curve from one place to the next. I grew up in the 1980s and 1990s. It was a fun time to grow up, and it was a time of certainly huge economic growth and material prosperity. And towards the end of the 1990s, we began to dream that the economic growth might be accompanied by a more socially compassionate politics. In 1997, I remember Tony Blair and Gordon Brown swept to power, and they stood there, admittedly somewhat awkwardly, bopping away to Dee Reams' Things Can Only Get Better. And we all believed it. The Berlin Wall had fallen not quite 10 years before. China was beginning to just open up as a nation, and liberal democracy was sweeping all before it as it established itself more and more across the globe. It was in 1992 that a man called Francis Fukuyama wrote a piece called The End of History and the Last Man. He was reflecting on the events of the end of the Cold War and the dissolution of the Soviet Union, and began to wonder whether, because fascism had been defeated at the end of the Second World War and now communism had been defeated at the end of the Cold War, he began to wonder whether we hadn't just reached a high point in human ideology, but he wondered whether we'd reached the end point of human ideology. This was it. This was as good as it could get, such that it represented the end of history. And the result of that has often, I think, been a kind of presumption. We just presume things are going to get better and better and better. Though more recently, people have begun to wonder whether, instead of an upward curve, we aren't just caught in some kind of endless loop. A cycle of events that seem to keep on repeating. After all, it was only very early in the next millennium that we had 9/11. One violent ideology had risen and fallen, and now here was another one. More recently, people have begun to talk about the relationship between America and China as Cold War II. And events of the last few weeks in America and in this country in terms of race relations have to make you wonder whether we aren't just seeing the same events being played out again and again and again, with small variations, but the same problem. And then COVID-19 has struck. And people are beginning to wonder whether it isn't so much an upward curve or even an endless loop, but whether perhaps we might be beginning to experience the downward curve. Things can only get worse. As someone said to me recently, history is back with a vengeance. We've seen jobs lost, huge chunks of people's education lost, economies shrinking and shrinking and shrinking in ways that people wonder might be permanent. The global community has shrunk. Globalization, people say, is a thing of the past. And of course, death which represents the ultimate low points, the ultimate valley, as it were. Death has drawn very, very near and has become much, much more prominent. And the presumption that accompanies thinking to do with the upward curve begins to be attached, replaced, I should say, with despair. I read this article, these words from an article by the journalist Tanya Gould. She writes for The Guardian, The Independent and various other newspapers. Here's what she said recently. She said, "I was crushed by COVID-19 and I didn't even have it. I imagined everyone I love unable to breathe. Then I imagined myself unable to breathe. I imagined the global economy crashing. Then I imagined all the hundreds of millions of pieces of individual despair that would follow from the crashing of the economy. I read about the poverty, the callousness, the untaught children and the domestic murders. I read the foolishness, I read the lies. I imagined our world falling into an abyss from which it would not return, because this is only the first act of our ending," and on and on. To borrow a phrase from the psalm that we had read to us just a few moments ago, it feels for her, it feels like for many of us, we are walking through the valley of the shadow of death. Now, of course, as you listen, you know things are always more complicated. It's too simplistic to say upward curve, downward curve, or even repeating loop. Human history is much, much messier. The 80s and 90s were not all good. More recent history has not been all bad. An individual's life is often characterized by incredible mountaintop experience, wonderful highs. And the simple fact is that everybody at some point, even if it's only at the end of our lives, we all will have to walk through the valley of the shadow of death. No, the simple fact is we all have to walk through the valley at some point. And this moment feels like a real valley moment. And so the question isn't really, will you have to walk through the valley of the shadow of death? The question is, can you have hope as you do it? Can you have hope as you walk on this inevitable journey that everyone must take? And the answer to that question will be determined by who you are walking through the valley with. A little while ago, I saw the film of this book by Cormac McCarthy called The Road. They made it into a film starring Viggo Mortensen, and this is what the review of the book in the Times newspaper said. They described it as a work of such terrible beauty that you will struggle to look away. It's a brilliant review of an amazing book that's set in a post-apocalyptic moment. You're never told exactly what the apocalypse has been, but the sky is always grey, the landscape's always bleak, and it's covered with a very thin layer of ash all of the time. But despite being such a bleak moment, the book is very strangely hopeful, because it's the story of a father and a son walking along the roads, taking a journey towards what they hope will be a better, brighter, warmer future. And as you read the book, you get this consistent sense that as long as the father and the son are together, everything is going to be all right. And the son is just a small boy. He constantly is struggling with the reality that he finds himself in, the brokenness of the world that he's living in and walking through. But the father is there alongside him all the time, encouraging him with his words. "Don't lose heart," he says. "Don't give up." There's a moment where the son is having bad dreams, having nightmares, and just wants to stay where he is, doesn't want to keep moving, doesn't want to keep going. And the father keeps saying to him, "Don't give up. I won't let you." The father and the son together give us hope. Well, whether you have hope depends on who is walking with you through the valley. And Psalm 23 that we read just a few moments ago is a psalm that in many respects is full of the realism of life and a story of hope. It's a famous bit of Hebrew poetry, and you don't have to be a churchgoer, I suspect, for bits of it to be familiar. It's written by King David. He was one of the great kings in the story of the Bible. And he knew very much the highs and the lows of human experience, the mountaintop and the valley. He had ruled over the nation of Israel at the height of its power, when it almost represented a global empire with huge riches and prosperity in abundance. But he also knew the lows. He knew poverty. He knew opposition. He knew the burden of leadership. He lived in caves, having been rejected. He knew it all. And in Psalm 23, he describes what it's like to walk through the valley with God. He writes at the very beginning in verse 1, those famous words, "The Lord is my shepherd." The Lord is my shepherd. And the rest of the psalm is a meditation, a reflection on what it's like to walk through life knowing God as exactly that. And the image of a shepherd, it's obviously not a very contemporary image. It's not a very London or East London image. You don't see men walking around in the Olympic Park with herds of sheep with crooks kind of, you know, telling the sheep where to go and that kind of thing. But nonetheless, I think it is an image that stands the test of time. You don't need to have lived in first century Palestine to understand what a shepherd does. And like I say, David takes this image to speak of his experience of walking through the ups and the downs of life. And for a few minutes, if you don't mind, I'd love just to walk us through the psalm, to enjoy these beautifully poetic words for ourselves. You see, he starts, doesn't he? He says of his experience with God as his shepherd, "He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me by still waters." You might have been for a walk in the countryside and you walk up to the edge of a field and it's lush and verdant. The grass is green and thick and you can see the little lambs frolicking around and the sheep are there bleating and happy. And there's a little stream that runs through the corner of the field. Everything is there for the sheep to have everything they need. David says, when God is my shepherd, he leads me to green pastures. He leads me by still waters. God gives him everything he needs. He goes on to speak of his inner life as well as his outer life. He says of the Lord, "He restores my soul." He restores my soul. Do you remember those words? We read them a few minutes ago by the journalist Tanya Gold. She said, "I was crushed by COVID-19 and I didn't even have it." She speaks of her soul being crushed. David speaks of his soul being restored. He goes on, he says, "He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake." I don't know what your experience of lockdown these last few months has been like. We've all had to deal with more time on our own, less time out and about getting on with the life that we love, more time having to reflect on what we're like as people. I wonder, have you found it as you've had to turn a little in on yourself and spend more time with yourself? For me, and I guess for you, you may have discovered it's an uncomfortable experience. You haven't been the person that you want to be in the last few weeks and months. You haven't discovered a beautiful, flourishing inner life. David says, when the Lord is his shepherd, he leads him in paths of righteousness. He helps him to walk down a path that is characterized by goodness, by rightness, by justice, by flourishing, by life-giving qualities. He leads me in paths of righteousness. And then he says these words in verse 4, and this is where the hope is expressed. These are very powerful words. He says, "Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me." It is a powerful image, isn't it? The valley of the shadow of death, a place where the shadows loom large, a gloomy, dim, desperate place. David knows what it's like to walk through that place, and yet he can say, "I will fear no evil." Why? Because of who he's walking with through the valley. "For you are with me. Your rods and your staff, they comfort me." He says towards the end of the psalm, then, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. It can feel at the best of times, but especially in this moment, as though it's brokenness that's following us around all of the time. David says, when the Lord's your shepherd, it's goodness that's pursuing you. It can feel like it's our past that follows us much of the time. David says, when the Lord is your shepherd, it's actually mercy that pursues you. And then the end of the psalm, it finishes with a wonderful note of hope. He says, I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. That is the happy ending that David knows will be his. That is what hope looks like when you walk through the valley. And all of that comes about because the Lord is his shepherd. So let me ask you, if I may, who is walking with you through the valley? And can they give you all of the things that David says are his?
The second reading is taken from John chapter 10 and is starting at verse 11. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me, just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd.
Death is the ultimate hope destroyer. It's why this moment, this COVID-19 moment, is in many respects so bleak and so desperate. And it's why the government's policy is what it is. They're having to make hard choices about the economics and the social dynamics of this moment. But overridingly, their decisions have been taken according to a principle that says we must reduce death. That's the overriding and the driving concern. And we kind of get why they've gone in that direction. And it's why David in Psalm 23 uses death as an expression of the bleakest image he can come up with. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. And it doesn't matter who you are, death is going to come to everyone. Yes, for many, if not most of us, this moment feels like a downward curve. We're walking through the valley. For some, not so much. Like Jeff Bezos, the guy who owns Amazon, this is an amazing moment if you own Amazon. Online home deliveries, you are quid in. This is, for Jeff Bezos, this has got to be a mountaintop experience right now. But he's going to die in the end too. Oh, it's universal. None of us can get around it in the end. And so if there's no solution to death, then in the end, the words of Psalm 23, these famous words that we've just been enjoying, in the end, they're just icing sugar. They're artificial sweetener, temporarily tasting good, but doing you no good in the end. They're like a kind of temporary anesthetic, a balm on a wound that is festering and infected and going to kill in the end anyway. The words of Psalm 23, if death can't be solved, aren't words of hope. They're words of wishful thinking and of optimism. And that's why when Jesus comes into the world and picks up explicitly this image from Psalm 23, this image of a good shepherd, he goes straight to and for the issue of death. We read it just a moment ago, John 10, verse 11. Jesus says those famous words, I am the good shepherd. I am the good shepherd. As though he says, look, you know, Psalm 23, that psalm that you so love, where David talks about the Lord as my shepherd. He's talking about me. It's me. I am the good shepherd. And then he goes straight for the heart of the issue. He says, the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Later on, just a few verses later, he gets even more specific. He says, I lay down my life for the sheep. It's an amazing picture. You think of the metaphor. It's a picture of a flock of sheep in danger. There's a wolf or a lion or a bear, something like that, fast approaching the sheep. And this shepherd is not a shepherd who runs off and leaves the sheep to be devoured. This shepherd is one who steps in between them. There is the flock, there is the predator, here is the shepherd standing between. He is willing to lay down his life for the sake of these sheep. That's what Jesus says he comes into the world to do. And in case you're thinking, no, this is a lovely poetic moment of teaching, Jesus is all mouth and no trousers, full of plenty of good chat, you just got to think for a moment of where his story goes. You don't have to have read your Bible in the last few years to know that Jesus died on a cross. But now you understand that moment because Jesus interpreted it for us in advance. He says, look, when I die on the cross, it's not some tragic accident, an unfortunate waste of a promising life. Here was this promising young teacher with so much potential, so badly misunderstood that he ends up dying on a cross. No, Jesus says, no, that's not what's going on. When I die on the cross, you need to understand I'm the good shepherd and I am laying down my life for the sheep. When Jesus dies, it's a sacrifice for the sake of his people who trust in him. Death is the ultimate hope destroyer. And as long as it is a reality in our experience, as long as it's the future to which all of us is heading, you can't really ever talk meaningfully about hope, not in a long term or an ultimate sense. But what if the death that we so feared had already been died for us? Then you can start to talk about hope in a meaningful sense. There is a statue in Paternoster Square in the middle of London. It's right next to St. Paul's Cathedral. And it's positioned between two famous and iconic buildings. On the one hand, you've got the Old Bailey. It's where the most serious criminal cases are tried. And then on the other side, you've got St. Paul's Cathedral. And on the top of the Old Bailey, if you stand back and look at the London skyline, you can see this. On the top of the Old Bailey, there is, she's called Lady Justice. And she is there standing on top of the Old Bailey. In one hand, she has a set of weighing scales. And in the other hand, she has a sword and she's wearing a blindfold. She speaks powerfully of justice, of what people deserve. She's blindfolded to speak of her neutrality. She holds weighing scales because she weighs up the right and the wrong, and she holds the sword because she is able to deliver the verdict, whatever it is. On the top of St. Paul's Cathedral, there is an equally, if not more powerful image. It's just a golden cross. And in between those two buildings, in the middle of Paternoster Square, you can go and see it for yourself, there is a sculpture. It's a sculpture that is very simply called the Good Shepherd. It has a shepherd leading a flock of sheep. And symbolically, it's pointing away from Lady Justice and towards the cross at the top of St. Paul's Cathedral. And whether they knew it or not, the people who put that statue there have said something very powerful about Jesus Christ. He says, I am the good shepherd. I lay down my life for the sheep. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. And when Jesus comes into the world, he says, I'm going to lead you. I'm going to lead you away from the death that you deserve, that saps hope, and towards eternal life with me, the ultimate hope. So who are you walking with through the valley? Where are you heading? Do you have hope in the crisis? Because David, at the end of Psalm 23, he told us what his hope was. He said these words, I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. When you encounter one of whom it can be said they represent goodness and mercy, such that it follows me all of my days. When you encounter the one who will pay the ultimate price so that you might go free, in the end, you want nothing more than to dwell with them forever. And in the end, you know they represent your best chance for an ultimate hope. I remember a long time ago hearing a story of a little boy. It's in the days of ancient Rome. A little boy who was kidnapped and taken away from his parents off to a faraway land to live in the city of Rome. Until that is, he was old enough to be sold as a slave to make some money for his captors. And that day came. They took him to the slave market to sell him for the best price they could find and to take the profits and head off. And on that day, as this little boy was put up for sale in the slave markets, an old man was walking past who saw this little boy and instantly felt a deep compassion for him, recognizing what must have happened to have got him to that point. And so that old man resolved in that moment to go home and to take all the money he could find and to come back to that market and to pay the price, even though it cost him a great deal personally, in order to free that little boy. And so he did. He took his money and he paid the price and took the little boy with him. And as they were walking away from the market, he turned to the little boy and said, "Look, I want you to know now you're free. You can go wherever you want, whenever you want, with whoever you want." And the little boy didn't quite know what to make of it in that moment. And so he turned back to the old man and said, "You're telling me I can go wherever I want?" He said, "Yeah, wherever you want, whenever I want, yep, whenever you want, with whoever I want." And the man said, "Yeah, with whoever you want." And so the little boy looked the old man in the eye and said to him, "Then I'll go with you." When you encounter someone who will pay the price for your freedom to give you hope, then you find the one you want to be with. You find the one in whose house you want to dwell forever. And that's the Christian experience. That, you might say, is the Christian hope. We encounter the Good Shepherd who lays down his life for the sheep. So in the midst of the crisis, as we walk through the valley of the shadow of death in a moment like this or any other moments, we know nonetheless we can have hope because of everything he's done and everything he promises. And you too can share in that hope. If you would be someone who would turn away from finding hope in yourself and your surroundings and instead put your hope in the one who lays down his life, then you too can know that sure and certain future. "I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." All you need to do is remember those words that Jesus spoke. "I am the Good Shepherd. The Good Shepherd lays down his life for the sheep." And for a few minutes now, we're going to hear some words from a song recorded by our music team that speaks wonderfully of this hope that the Christian has in the midst of the crisis because of the love of God expressed in Jesus Christ.